Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We have a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes, from setting a post or pouring a walkway to installing concrete block or natural stone. We've got the mix you need in stock today. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
And now the second shot to give Florida a two-point lead, and they do. And here we go. 8.9 to play. Sturge with the catch. Sturge bounce pass to the corner. Fulgaris for three.
Oh! Oh!
9 to play.
Florida's got no timeouts.
Iowa takes the lead by one.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today is Wednesday, March 25th. This is episode 225. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like. Join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Guys, it's Sweet 16 time. Baseball underway today. NHL, NBA in the home stretch of their seasons. Let's get it going. We're going to start talking about the Sweet 16. Darren?
Here we are. Okay, so it starts off with it's going to be 67 games. 52 are down. We have 15 to go, okay? That's what makes the tournament exciting, is that all these games are done over a four-day span. At least, well, it's a six-day span now because they play the first four games. But it's still that four, those first 4 days that are so exciting. And normally you do this chronologically, but since if you can see us on YouTube behind us, Gino and I and Kevin are all Red Storm fans. So we're going to start on Friday rather than Thursday, and we're going to start off in the wonderful Eastern bracket, where the fifth seed, the St. John's Red Storm, or Redmen as we like to call them, will take on Duke, the top seed. I mean, Kev, we've seen Duke struggle with Siena.
Yep.
We saw them have a tough first half against TCU and then pull away. And at the same time, Gino, we've seen, St. John's, kind of dominate Northern Iowa early and just kind of stem the tide. And at the same time, pull away from Kansas and let them back in where they need a last second miracle. So, Kev, let's start with you. What do you see in this matchup?
As much as we're rooting for St. John's, we'd love to see Duke go down. I think especially if Duke gets any of their injured players back this weekend. I had this matchup in my bracket. I picked Duke originally. I don't think it's going to change. I think Duke is just a little bit more talented than the Red Storm. And I think, they've had a great run here. They got to the Sweet 16. Sometimes they can go so cold shooting that offense can really falter. I mean, we saw, especially against Kansas, where Hoskins was the only guy that was shooting the ball well. And, Zuby, when he's playing against bigger guys, seems to struggle a little bit inside. And I think Duke's got enough length. And I think it's going to be a really tough matchup for St. John's, unfortunately.
All right, Gino? What are your thoughts?
Johnnies have only lost once since January 3rd, went right through the Big East Conference tournament, blew out UConn by 20, first Sweet 16 since 99. I think Pitino's got them playing well. They need three players to play big, and the first one is Zuby. He has to play big. He's averaging 16 points this season. He needs to put up 20, okay? The second guy is Bryce Hopkins. Darren, we talked about it the other day. He's the guy that you're going to depend on to score, especially when Zuby's having an off night like the other night, right? He's got to put points on the board. And then they're going to need to get some shooting. Ian Jackson, Darling, somebody's going to need to score on this for this team to win. Duke wants flow. They want spacing. They're going to make Boozer the big playmaker in this game. St. John's is going to have to want chaos the way they've been playing. Pressure, they're going to have to turn it into Pitino-style street fight. That's the only way they're going to win this game. I got this feeling that they're going to win this game. Kansas was no easy task, don't get me wrong. But at one point they were up 14 coming down the stretch. And then, especially as we got at that point, they were completely cold. They can't have the cold stretch against Duke. The Duke is just too good. I'm thinking St. John's. And by the way, spread is 6.5 right now. I love St. John's plus 6.5 because even if they lose, I think this is close. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, Duke is the number one seed in the whole tournament, right? I mean, they're the overall number one seed. They kind of struggled. They had a good second half against TCU, but, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, it's the typical Duke gets a few calls, then there's a tech, and then there's this, and then there's that. And I'm not saying that they wouldn't have beat TCU by 15 or 20 anyway. They probably would have. I'm not trying to say that it wasn't. TCU didn't hit shots. In the first round, Siena hit shots, and that's what kind of kept them in it. St. John's the other day went 11 for 35 from three, Gino.
Yeah.
Hopkins was 6 for 9. The rest of the team was 5 for 26. That will not get it done.
Absolutely.
We're going to need two or three guys that can hit threes consistently. Zuby was 0 for 4. Now, if they're going to have Zuby with a big man matchup, he's got to be able to take him on the perimeter and drive out. If they can't respect the jump shot, they have no shot. The thing, though, Duke turned the ball over 16 times against TCU. St. John's is better defensively than TCU. They just are. They forced 16 Kansas turnovers as well. So that's the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope. Duke had trouble with TCU's man-to-man. It wasn't even like a press. St. John's is going to mix and match different things. They have the athletes to compete with them. If they can get enough offense, I think the Johnnies are going to win it. I picked them to win this game, much like Kev the other way, and I'm going to stick with it. I mean, I think that, you know, they're a lunch pail team. You know, they're a hard hat team. They go out there and they play rough and play physical. Duke's going to get their calls, and Duke's going to be very good, and Boozer will probably be the best player on the court. I just think that St. John's finds a way in a close game, Gino. I kind of agree with you on that.
But I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
I know you do. None of us are Dukies. Either no. Duke's like the Yankees. Either you like him or you hate him. So it's like Notre Dame. Yeah, Gino.
Do you like the over-under of 140? It's right now at 141.5.
I would lean over in this game.
Really?
Because if it's under, I don't think that they have a shot to win.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to beat Duke by scoring 65. I think you're going to beat Duke by scoring 75. I'm just being honest. Boozer's going to get his points. They have enough guys to do it. If I think they're going to win, they're going to have to outscore him a little bit, which means they're going to have to shoot, you know, 40, 42, 43% from the floor and like a third from three. And, you know, a little bit better than a third from three, probably 35% or so. While we're in the East region, the other matchup's also awesome. We got the 3-seed Michigan State versus the 2 UConn. We get two great coaches, whether you like them or not, and Izzo and Hurley. You got Michigan State, they dispatched a feisty Louisville team, Kev. Also have great balance with everything, with Fears and Carr and Kohler and Cooper. Tell us a little bit about State. I know you've been on them all year.
Yeah, I've loved them all year. I tell you, this is a game that I feel bad for the referees having to deal with both coaches. Hurley's face is just a little bit more punchable than Izzo's, I think. That's the only difference between them.
Izzo's more of a whiner and like come on, you know. Hurley's more of a yeller and then a whiner. It's kind of a weird combo.
It's probably close to punchable face theory, by the way.
I like Izzo more than you do, but at the same time, Mick was the only one that got the tee the other night. And he got it for clapping, which I didn't understand. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been, you know, Furman pushed UConn a little bit. UCLA played them pretty well. You know, I don't think UConn's really been like UConn, you know, go back to the last, you know, two years prior to the one last year. I think Michigan State, like you said, with Fears and with some of the balance they have, I think this is a good, like I said, just a good balanced team that can really handle UConn here. And I like Michigan State here.
Gee, UConn is, you know, they pulled away. I mean, again, UCLA playing without their best player in Billado. Let's be best offensive player in Billado. But they did have a good second half. Game was close in the first half, and they kind of pulled it away. You've seen UConn play a couple times, at least against St. John's, and obviously we saw him in the tournament so far. Any thoughts on UConn, Gee?
Listen, when they're at their – when they're playing well, they're the best team probably in the country. I've seen them – you know, twice against St. John's where St. John's basically took them out with no problems. By halftime this game, you know, in both those games, St. John's was up by more than 10. You know, if they're going to play, if they're going to be Jekyll and Hyde like that, they can get taken out. I mean, we're at this point now with 16. Michigan State could take anybody out. So, you know, it is Izzo. For me, I think UConn's got too much. I think as much as Izzo wants to he wants to get Michigan State past this point, I don't know if he's going to. Spread right now is UConn minus 1.5. So
you like UConn in this one?
Yeah, I do.
Here's the thing. Okay, to me, this matchup is interesting because UConn won game one with Reed having a monster night. Then they won game two against UCLA with Caravan having a monster night, the two big guys. They're not going to be able to do that as easy against Michigan State as they did against the two teams that they played, because Michigan State has Kohler and Cooper and guys like that, and Carr and guys that can bang around and be a little bit of a nuisance. The thing about UConn that's really been noticeable is that they've got nothing from Smith, Demery, and Ball. Nothing from the backcourt. These guys haven't hit shots. They just haven't hit them. You know, Demery was invisible in the last game. Smith a little bit, and Ball's been awful. If they play like that, I don't think Michigan State has much of a problem in this game. I think Michigan State can win this game, you know, 6-8 points, maybe even 10. If they start hitting their shots, much like Gino was talking about, if everybody's clicking, they can play with everybody because they can space you out. They haven't shown it for me yet. And I think that what Michigan State brings in with Fort and Tang off the bench as guys that can just shoot threes and just get things going. I mean, get the 24-year-old transfer in Fort, you know, like 60-year senior that just comes in and hits shots. I just think Michigan State, I'm going to be opposite of Gino. I think Michigan State has a little too much for UConn in this one with consistency. So then we, you know, majority of us would have it being St. John's versus Michigan State. We'll see how that goes. But, Kev, do you like Michigan State to get through this bracket regardless?
I do. I had them in my bracket to begin with. I think Michigan State, this is just one of those years that just felt like an Izzo Michigan State team, you know, the classic one that gets to the Final Four.
And G, if you had to pick one team to get through this bracket?
I think it's St. John's. I think Pitino's getting them to the Final Four. I do.
You know, I'm very torn on that Final Eight matchup between St. John's and Michigan State if it happens, because it could just as easily be UConn.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, versus Duke. I'm going to stay with St. John's, too. We'll see how it goes. I might be a little bit of a homer, and I also picked them in the pool, so therefore I'm kind of riding that on my whole thing here.
I tell you, Darren, with this East region, if this was the Final Four, would you be upset?
No. I mean, and we can say that about a couple regions, but this East one is really, really good.
Yeah.
Since we started on Friday, let's finish on Friday, okay? We have the 4-seed Alabama versus the 1-seed Michigan, okay? Guys, Alabama's been shooting the lights out in this tournament after a slow start against Hofstra. They've been lighting it up. They embarrassed Texas Tech. I didn't stay up for the game. I didn't have to stay up for the game. We knew what that game was going to be when we finished recording, you know, one of our better shows the other night, as Gino and I discussed the other. We're joking, of course. Lawson Hollowell hasn't hurt him yet. You know, they were 19 for 42 from three. Very tough to defend the team that way. Meanwhile, on the other side, Kev, Michigan's complete. You know, they got the size. They've got a bunch of guys that can score. Landenborg is a beast. He can do everything on the court. Mara's 7-4, and he bothers everybody. Johnson, transfer from Illinois, has been great. They have great guards. They have Cadeau, Burdett, you know, Gale, McKenney, all these guys. Kev, who do you think gets through this one here on Friday night?
You know, I'm almost scared that Alabama's been shooting too well. That you feel like, you know, especially after 19 for 42, can they keep that up? And you feel like there's, you know, some regression to the mean. They're not that good from three. They're a high power offense. They can shoot the ball, no doubt about it, but not 19 for 42 good. And if they just fall a little short of that, you know, let's say they're 13 for 42, you know, it's more like the 33% or third, you know, thereabouts. Like I said, Michigan's got the size, they've got more complete team. I think this might be the spot where the loss of Holloway starts to factor in here. I think Michigan has just been good all year, and I think Michigan has a really good chance of getting by Alabama here.
Gee, what are you thinking?
I think Michigan gets past this team. I think at this point now, I think Michigan is just better than Alabama right now. But I'm gonna throw some at you guys. The spread is Michigan minus 9.5. Wow. And I'm not sure I love Michigan minus 9.5 against Alabama. And the second part of that, Kev, is they are the biggest over under out of the eight games. They are at 172.5.
Woo.
Okay.
That's the highest one we've seen. I saw 169 and a half in that High Point, Arkansas. I didn't see anything above that.
So there's there's another one in the 160s, but right now they're at 172 and a half. So I guess they're counting Alabama shooting that good again.
It's a lot of possessions.
Yeah. I for me, I think Michigan gets past this team. I do like Alabama plus 9.5, though, I have to tell you.
Yeah, that's a very enticing.
I lean that way, too, with you. This is interesting, and the reason why, because you mentioned something that's really on my mind a little bit, Kev, about how could they shoot like this, you know, again. And part of me was like thinking the same way as you, and then part of me goes back to 1989, which is dumb as hell, where I'm thinking about Glenn Rice and Higgins just never getting cold. And yeah, taking Michigan all the way to the championship game with Fisher and just doing that whole thing. And now the thing about Alabama is their bigs can shoot threes. If they can hit the threes, Mara has to go, right? You can't leave him on the court. And all of a sudden, that exterior defense that Michigan relies on, because I know they have Mara backing them up, isn't as effective. Because now they can't play up on him because now they can get driven by. Johnson's not going to block the shots the way Mara does. So it's all going to come down to Alabama's bigs being able to hit threes. I think they come up short. I'm going to take Michigan to win it. But I think the game's going to be competitive. I think that Alabama can spurt like no team in the country. They come down and they'll shoot four threes in a minute. And they can score 12 points in a minute like nobody else. They put pressure. They force other teams to play faster. So we'll see what happens. Nightcap on Friday, guys. We have the 6-seed Tennessee versus the 2-seed Iowa State. Tennessee beat up Miami of Ohio, and they outlasted Virginia. And they've done it all without Amen, who's been their best player all year. He's really been invisible the first game. He's been a little banged up. Second game, I think he barely cracked double digits. Go the other way, Iowa State rolled, including beating up, wiping the floor with Kentucky the other day. And the big question for them is Joshua Jefferson, if he's going to play or not. We hear the exciting game-time decision, last I heard. Gee, we'll start with you this time. Who do you think in the Iowa State-Tennessee game?
I think Iowa State is playing really well right now. I think Tennessee is going to give them a run for their money. Spread's 3.5. I actually like Tennessee in the game. I actually like Tennessee to win this game. I think they're going to get past. Tennessee plus 160 on the money line is going to be my bet. But I think Tennessee gets past Iowa State. I think it's close. I think that, you know, maybe this is 3-point game coming down the stretch. Somebody hits a big shot. But I like Tennessee right now. Kev?
Mr. SEC? Yeah.
You know, Iowa State
looks good. You went against one already. That's why I'm saying it.
Iowa State looked so good against Kentucky. But we knew Kentucky, you know, they struggled against Santa Clara. Against Iowa State. Tennessee is really playing at a different level in the tournament here. They're playing up to where I think people thought they had the potential to be playing at. They're playing much higher than the 6th seed right now. This is going to be a war. Again, you know, if Jefferson was healthy and definitely playing, I think this is Iowa State with him being uncertain. And we saw that ankle last week. I mean, that looked bad. And, you know, the fact that he's, you know, in a walking boot last week over the weekend and, you know, riding that little scooter in, I think Tennessee can pull this one off. I'll take Tennessee over Iowa State.
Wow.
You know, it's funny because we have a great point guard matchup in this one as well with Gillespie and Iowa State's – why am I blanking on his name? Lipsy, I'm sorry. You know, that's a great matchup. Momcilovic has hit the leading three-point shooter in the country, leading shooter of anybody from the perimeter. Torian Heisey, a great contributor. Buchanan's the only big – reason why I lean toward Tennessee in this one is that Tennessee has a little bit more size. Jefferson neutralizes, even though he's not huge, and the fact that he's just a good rebounder. Right now they're down to really Buchanan is the only guy at Iowa State that can rebound. Well, Tennessee throws out three big guys at you. And Amen's 6'9". He's like the mini version of Durant right now till this tournament where he has not done anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean toward Tennessee in a close one too, but I wouldn't be surprised either way. Again, this is a – you know, Michigan, Alabama, Iowa State, Tennessee is not a bad bracket either, by the way. So, no. Friday night. So, who's the team that gets out of the overall bracket? Who are we seeing in the Final Four, Kev?
I think Michigan still gets there. I think they're the most complete team in this bracket.
Jake?
So do I, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm going to take Tennessee to get through.
Ooh!
I think Michigan – I think Michigan, it's all about if Yaxel's hitting his shots, no one's going to beat them. But if he struggles a little bit, I think that that somebody can take him out. Now we go to the excitement of the West region on Thursday night, guys. Texas-Purdue, the 11 versus the 2. Another probably big spread, I'm assuming, G. It's got to be about 7, 7.5, 8, somewhere around there, I'm figuring.
7.5.
Okay, I wasn't that far off. Texas won 3 games in this tournament so far, guys, including dispatching BYU and Gonzaga, who were both teams that they were not expected to beat. They got a lot of talent, and they got the dominant big man in Vokatitis. They also have Mark, Swain, Pope. They have some good players. On the other side, Kendall Weaver is like a great defensive stopper, and he does a lot of little things for that team. Purdue, on the other hand, has the size to match up, though. They got Kaufman Wren. They have Clough up down low. They got the best point guard maybe in the history with the most assists of all time in Braden Smith. Shooters with Cox and Lawyer. They have a bunch of guys. Kev, what do you think gets through the Purdue-Texas game?
Since I'm an SEC guy, I will go against Texas.
Gotcha.
Texas, we were really unsure of Texas even making the tournament.
Very true.
And the fact that they've won 3 games, including the first 4, is a testament to how well they're playing. They were able to overcome DeBanza, I think, with some of the injuries on that team. Gonzaga is not your typical Gonzaga team, so I think there's a little difference there, too. Purdue just feels like they're finding ways to win, especially that Miami game. And with Smith, leading the way, I think he can – the other night, I think Smith had a really rough game there.
He didn't shoot well at all.
He didn't shoot well. He had a lot of turnovers. I think he had about 7 or 8 turnovers in that game, too. I think he plays a little bit better. I think Purdue, like I said, just being a little bit more of a complete team, I think they handled Texas.
G, where are you going?
I'm going opposite. I think Texas continues this little stretch they're on. Knocked out BYU, knocked out Gonzaga. Listen, I don't think Purdue's going down. I don't think they're going down without a fight. I do love Texas plus 7.5. I think it's in that range. But I think Texas pulls the upset here. Darren?
I'm going to go with the favorite here. I think Purdue's going to win the game. The spread's intriguing to me, though, just because I think that down the stretch of a game like this, foul shooting it'll come down to, and I think that Purdue will foul the big guy who really seemed to struggle. I also think that, I don't know, Purdue does a lot of things right. I believe very much in Matt Painter more than Sean Miller in this matchup. I don't always lean coach very heavily, but I think Matt Painter's a hell of a coach. I think Purdue finds a way to get past it. I don't think Sean Miller's a bad coach. I just think Painter's a better one. And then the nightcap, I'm actually looking forward to this game one of the most of all, even though the spread's also probably pretty big. Probably 8, 8.5, 9, something like that. Arizona-Arkansas, okay? Arkansas has Calipari, right? They have amazing athletes like Brazil and Thomas and Richmond. And they have the best player on the court in Acuff, right? And then you got Arizona, I think, is the most complete team in the tournament. And the player of the year in the Big 12 Javon Bradley, not Javon Gardner, my mistake. They also have all these guys, Burries and Pete and all these guys. They can score from anywhere. They can have 4 guys struggle and still beat you. They shot like 30% from the other floor the other night, and they won by 12. I mean, they do a lot of things really well. Gee, who is going to play Texas?
All right, so just before we get there, Arkansas is a 7.5-point underdog.
Okay.
And this is the second biggest over-under at 165.5 right now. So they do expect this game to be in the 80s. I think this is Acuff's game. I think he pushes himself into the top 2 to be drafted. He goes ahead of Peterson in this game. I think Arkansas pulls the upset here. I love the 7.5. Give me Arkansas and give me the 7.5. Kev?
Oh, I love Acuff. Like I said, he's had a big tournament already. 35, 36 against High Point. And I think he's got to be pushing up into the high 30s again this game. I think that's the only way they have a chance of winning. But I think Arizona, when we did the previews, when we did our selection show on Selection Sunday there, I said it was more of an individual versus a team, it felt like. Even though Acuff had some help with some of the other players you mentioned there, Darren, I think Arizona, again, with the more complete, balanced team, I think will take care of this. High-scoring game, fun game to watch, but I think Arizona gets through.
Yeah, I think Arizona actually pulls away in this game late. I think they cover, actually. I mean, if it's under eight, I'm going to lay the wood with Arizona. I think that they'll find a way to pull away. I just think they're the most talented team here. I'll be rooting for Arkansas, by the way, for anyone that doesn't. Arizona's my champ in the pool and all that stuff. But I'm going to root for Arkansas because I want to see Acuff do well, and I like the way they play. I just think that there's too much size and too much. Bradley's a defensive stopper against Acuff. That's going to be fun. I want to see the great defensive point guard against the great offensive point guard, the senior versus the freshman. There's a lot of cool things to watch. I'm going to take Zona. Now let's go to the South, okay? The matchup we all saw coming. Iowa-Nebraska, the 9 versus the 4. The only reason why this looks like it's anything at all in these brackets, is that there's a 9, even though it's Iowa. Two teams split during the year. Iowa won at home by 5, low-scoring game. Nebraska won in overtime by 9, and a little bit of a higher-scoring game in Lincoln. Again, Iowa's got size shooting and all that stuff, and kind of so does Nebraska. These are pretty mirror-image teams in the way they play. Kev.
Great football matchup here, isn't it?
The Iowa-Nebraska game.
Great football matchup.
Oh, absolutely. It's a rivalry.
You know, Iowa, you know, you watch them play, and the way they play kind of reminds you of the Iowa Hawkeyes football team, too. You know, not flashy offense, get through with terrific defense. Nebraska, I mean, we saw that game against Vandy, which was just a fun game to watch. They were lucky that Tyler's shot rimmed out. Otherwise, they would have gone to overtime, and who knows? Again, I think this is just, you know, you said, Darren, they split the two times in the regular season. I think it's an evenly matched game. I think it's a low-scoring, slowly played game. But I think Nebraska somehow pulls this one out. We know that they pulled a great job getting the upset against Florida. But I think Nebraska comes back, especially if they can travel, if they can bring their fans down to Houston at all. I think Nebraska can have a little bit of a home court there, feel against Iowa. I'll take Nebraska.
Gee.
I think this is Iowa. I think they continue. They're coming off the big win versus Florida. Spread, by the way, is 1.5. Nebraska minus 1.5. Lowest over-under on the board, Kev. So I think you got that one nailed at 131.5. I think this is Iowa. I think they wind up. After coming off the big win against Florida, there's no letdown. They come out and they beat Nebraska here. So, Darren?
Yeah, I'm with you, G. I think Iowa finds a way in this one. I don't think that they're going to have any chance of duplicating Oklahoma City because Houston's going to buy up a lot of those tickets for Houston. And I think that Arizona will travel well to Houston. Illinois will travel well into Houston.
You think they will too?
I think they will. I just think they have a big size, and I think Iowa will be all right. I think that Nebraska might have an edge over Iowa, but not as big as it was. This rivalry in football is called the Heroes game, and they have two heroes. We got Steritz on one side, and then you've got Sanford on the other. Two guys that kind of look like mirror images of each other. I honestly think the bigs on Iowa right now are playing a little bit better than Mast is on Nebraska, and I just think that Iowa finds a way. I don't know. I think 2-point game, 4-point game, I don't think it's anything crazy. I also like the under in this. I think this game will be like that 58-54 type of game. And then the final game of the weekend, boys, maybe the best game of the weekend. We get the 3 Illinois and the 2 Houston in Houston. Now, if this game wasn't in Houston, it would even be more exciting. You know, you got two good offensive teams that don't play at a fast pace, but they both score. You got Houston, you got a freshman point guard matchup to start it off with Keaton Wagler against Kingston Flemings, which is going to be outstanding. Both freshmen, both point guards play a little bit differently. Illinois got a ton of depth, ton of guys that end in Vich, you know, that can just shoot it and do a bunch of different things. Houston's got a bunch of athletes. They also return guys like Emmanuel Sharp or Miles Uzan, who played in the championship game last year. Gino, where are we going with this one? Who do you like?
I like Houston. They're at home. This is going to feel like they're playing a home game. Houston minus 2.5 is my pick here.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gino. I think Houston is such an efficient offensive team. You look at the two games they've played, it just feels like they're just very workmanlike, getting through. No issues getting through the two games so far. Took care of Texas A&M. And I think playing – like I said, basically a home game is going to be a huge difference against Illinois. Illinois is a really good team. Should be a great matchup again. But I think Houston pulls this one out and wins going away by about 7 or 8 points.
I saw a very interesting interview with Underwood, the coach of Illinois. They said, are you upset that you have to play this game in Houston? He's like, well, when I was coaching, you know, Division III, I took a bus that I drove from, you know, somewhere in the Midwest to Colorado. Oh, to Mesa, Arizona, I'm sorry. And he's like, so, yeah, no, I'm okay playing Houston anywhere we have to play him. I mean, he was being very funny about it, but he honestly, this is going to be a matchup of which point guard keeps their composure better and which group of veterans, because Illinois's got Boswell as well, who's been around, transferred from Arizona, another fifth-year senior. Houston, again, like the guys I mentioned with Sharp and Uzan, they both have young players to go along with it. They both have size. They're both physical. It's just hard to go against the home team in this one, so I like Houston in this one. And guys, who do you think gets to the four out of this bracket?
I think it's Houston.
I had Houston beating Florida in this round. I don't see any difference, even though it's going to be Iowa or Nebraska. I'll take Houston.
I think so too. We didn't do it in the last round. I'm sorry about that. So who did you think was going to get out of the West? Was it? We didn't do Arizona, Arkansas, or.
I had Arkansas advancing, so I'm taking Arkansas. I'm sure you two both take Arizona. You had
they were on champs, so I think it's hard for Kevin and I to go against them, but we'll see. It wasn't a very we didn't go out on a lot of limbs on this one, Kev. G?
All right, so Thursday, Texas, Iowa, Arkansas, Illinois, you're the four underdogs. Which one do you give the best chance of winning?
I have Iowa winning.
Iowa?
And what about Friday? St. John's, Alabama, Tennessee is the one I picked. And Tennessee.
I give Tennessee the best chance only because of the Iowa State injury.
Well, I'll go Michigan State since I picked them to win.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
All right. I think St. John's and I think Iowa is probably the one in that one.
Do you guys have any opinions about the starting times for the games and what order the games are being played in?
I was surprised St. John was early. It doesn't matter. I'm glad, by the way. I don't need to be stressing out till midnight, because no matter what time they list, it's going to start 15 to 20 minutes after anyway. I'm happy. I'm sure I'll be up for both, but I'm glad St. John's starting at 7. Listen, it's very hard to argue that Izzo and Hurley is not a feature matchup. You know, what are we supposed to say? I mean, that Connecticut UConn is worse than St. John's team that has won a title and Duke is Duke, but it's not Krzyzewski's Duke. They don't get that same love that they once got.
Yeah.
I don't have any comments, but I just wish the NCAA would not start these games at 10 o'clock at night.
Well, the Sunday night was ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah,
it was.
I mean, you can't tell me that they can't. They have four networks. Stagger them by a half hour and do 7:30, 8:30, or 8:30, 9:30. At least you feel like you can go to bed before midnight. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, CBS doesn't want to give up their Sunday night. So you don't have to, but you know, you've got, like I said,
what's on CBS on Sunday night?
Do you need the single games at noon and at 2:30 or 3 o'clock? And not start the third games until 5:30, 6 o'clock?
Even if you staggered to 2:30 and you did the noon by itself and then one at like 3:30 or 4.
Yeah.
It would kind of like, I don't know, to me it would make more sense.
Then you bring back the start times for that last game quite a bit.
What's on CBS on Sunday nights?
I don't know.
Exactly. 60 minutes. After 60 minutes, though.
Tracker.
Oh, is that a big show?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. CBS always seems to have like the old person's shows.
You want the rest of the
schedule? Walk and Texas Ranger, Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah. All right. Thank you, 1974.
You're welcome.
Excuse me, 1984.
We'll watch Little House on the Prairie on NBC instead.
That's right.
So, college band, again, listen, it's exciting. Me and Gino have colds, so we don't have the same voice that we normally do. Kev's the only one that sounds pure here. Give us 3 days in Atlantic City running around, and we're still drained a week later. But beside that, you know, college basketball, it's been a fun tournament. Haven't seen the upsets. The Cinderella, like we talked about, may never be the same anymore, but we just want to see some good games. we have a local to root for, and we're excited about that. And hopefully the Johnnies can do a little magic, get us to the eight. If they get us to the weekend, it'll be really exciting. They get us beyond the weekend, even better. G, back to you, my friend.
All right, so baseball started today. Yankees playing the Giants in San Francisco. They are currently up 5-0 in the fifth. Freed pitching a two-hitter as we speak. Baseball for the Mets starts tomorrow. Kev, let's talk a little bit about the Mets to start.
Freddie Peralta on the mound, getting his first Mets start. You know, we can recap the offseason real quick. It was quite the upheaval. It was quite the change during the offseason. You know, long-time face is gone. Started off with Nimmo for Simeon. They lost Pete to the Orioles, which I still don't understand why. Diaz, they lost to the Dodgers, which I think felt like a failed negotiation. They traded off McNeil, which was fine. I mean, you know, at this point, he's a slap-hitting, singles-hitting utility outfielder. Brought in a bunch of players. You know, Stern started off the offseason about run prevention. And that's why they made the trade Nimmo for Simeon. And then they bring in Luis Robert. They moved Soto to left, which opens up right field for Bench, who's, you know, supposed to be a pretty good defensive player. Then they signed Bichette, who's never played third base. I understand for the bat. And they signed Polanco, who's played one batter in the major leagues at first base. And they're going to use Beatty over there, who has never played first base in the majors. And they're going to play Vientos there, who we know is a butcher no matter where he plays. It feels like he talked out of both sides of his mouth. But that's the defensive part. On offense, you know, we're sure that Juan Soto is one of the best hitters in baseball. And that's a given. That's a guarantee. Lindor's always good. Hopefully the hammy doesn't give him too much trouble early. We know Bichette's a terrific hitter. But I think as long as he's healthy. I think Polanco's a little overrated. You know, 2 years ago, this guy hit .213. Robert is a huge question mark. He's coming off consecutive seasons of .224 and .223. Simeon, despite the gold gloves, two straight seasons, .237 and .230. Does he have anything left in the bat? We think Benj will be okay, but he's a rookie. Do you know for sure? No. You hope the second half for Beatty and Alvarez portend, you know, some good seasons offensively. But again, we've seen both of these guys up and down in their career so far. And they really got to miss the power bat that Alonso brought. Are you truly afraid of anybody in this lineup after Soto?
No.
simple answer, right?
You have good players. There are good hitters on the lineup. But there's nobody must-watch hit like Soto is right now.
Yeah. Now, the pitching, we know, was a big issue last year during the collapse. The starters didn't go deep enough. The bullpen was overworked. And I think they've addressed the starting issue. You know, they bring in Peralta, who's an ace. You like to see him go a little deeper in games, but he's an ace. You saw what you liked in what you liked what you saw, I should say, in McClain from what you saw in 8 starts. You feel like he's got the stuff that could be a real good number 2 starter. With Senga looking healthy, with Peterson and Holmes after pitching career highs in innings last year, you hope they've increased their stamina this year rather than taking another step back and, you know, coming off, you know, regressing a little bit. You've got Manaea in the bullpen. You've got some depth in the minor leagues with Christian Scott, with Jonah Tong. A little further down, you've got guys like Santucci and Weininger.
Who's playing in high A, Kev? Who do we got?
I could probably go through that list, too.
You probably have something written. Gino's laughing.
The bullpen.
The Yankee in death won't be anywhere near this, so there you go.
The bullpen's a different story, though. I still don't understand how they screwed up Diaz's negotiation.
It was horrible.
Devin Williams, first crack at this, but he hasn't been the same since Alonso hit the home run off him in the playoffs. He was dreadful for the Yankees last year. Is Weaver going to be more like the 2024 Weaver or the 2025 Weaver? If he's more like 24, he's a solid addition. You like the lefties with Rayleigh and with Minter once he's back healthy. Garcia Myers helps you in the middle of relief. But then you also have guys like Brazoban and the immortal Dickie Lovelady.
Thank God they brought him back.
Yeah.
It's a great name, though. Regardless, every team needs a Dickie Lovelady.
So I think overall for me, I think there's too many question marks to really feel that confident going into this year. I was more confident last year going into the season than this year. I think if the starting pitching, yes, the starting pitcher will be better. I don't know about the offense. I don't know about the bullpen. I think this team can get to the, if it's a really good season, I think the ceiling is high 80s and wins in the wild card. What do you guys think?
Well, then you definitely want the under because the over-under is 90 and a half.
90 and a half. Wow. Too many question marks to me.
I think they'll be fighting for that wild card. I think they have a shot at making the playoffs. I think the offense will be good but not great. I think the starting pitching improvement will be the key for this team. Peralta's got to be really good. That's what it comes down to. Yep. I mean, McClain, I'm not going to count the World Baseball Classic stuff.
No.
Because who the hell knows about that? You're just getting out there and stuff like that. But I think that Peralta and McClain have to be the top of that rotation and do some things. I think a little less stress on Peterson will only help him. And, you know, listen, we'll see what goes on with the rest of the rotation. I mean, it's Kasenga. We hope he's healthy, you know. Yeah. I mean, haven't seen it much, but hope he is. And I'm not the biggest fan of Clay Holmes, but I hope he pitches well. I don't dislike him. I just don't trust him.
He had a solid season last year. His first year as a starter.
I agree.
And if that's your number four starter, that's not bad.
No, I get it. I get it. I just, you know, Clay Holmes is great when there's nobody on. It's just that when he has runners on, all of a sudden he has a tendency to be a little freaky. G?
All right. Here's the thing that bothers me the most with this team, Kev.
Okay.
David Stearns has put this team together like he was putting the Milwaukee Brewers together on the field. I'm sorry, but that's exactly what he's done.
Yes.
You took away the big power hitter.
Yes.
You're bringing guys in and playing them at different positions and hope they can succeed. Polanco was a mess when he was playing second base. What makes me think he's going to be okay at first, okay? You want to go Strat, he was a five at second, but let's forget about that for a sec, okay? Listen, Simeon... I have no idea what Marcus Simeon is at this point in time. 3 years ago, he would be a great pickup. I like Bichette. I don't like him playing third base. I mean, put Simeon at third base, for God's sakes, and let Bichette stay at second and be comfortable. Luis Robert was horrible in Chicago. Bench, we have no idea what this kid's going to do up here. He could get hot 50 games. He could be bad 50 games. Yep. You have no idea. It's like Stearns put this team together like he was the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't buy it. Now, I think the pitching is better. And as it happened when we were actually on a podcast, I love the Peralta move. Yep. I think he stabilizes the whole thing. Tell me what you're getting out of Senga. I'll give you something. Peterson should be good. You know, for me, Peterson, as it got into that second half, you probably hit the wall with how many starts you were giving him in a year, but he was good. Clay Holmes, I know too much about Clay Holmes to think he's going to be a good starter. I'm sorry. You know, yeah. McClain should be good. I will tell you, McClain should be good. I don't know how good he's going to be over the course of a full entire season after he's made 25 starts, after he pitched in the Baseball Classic. I have no idea what he's going to be. For me, they're a wild card team at best. And I think Stearns is probably looking for a job in the offseason. I'm sorry, Kev. That's how I feel.
You're basically repeating what I said. We're in lockstep, I think, with a lot of this. We are so much in agreement.
Here's the thing. I didn't pick them last year to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I actually had confidence in that team. I don't know how much confidence I have in this team. I got to be honest.
I 1,000% agree with you, Gino. I've got nothing. You know,
here's the funny thing about this team to me. Alvarez has to be the guy that we thought he was going to be. And somehow, some way, Vientos has to recapture the form he had 2 years ago. And listen, there's nothing to back up that he will. I'm just saying that they need that power bat that they lost with Alonso. And there's nobody else in this lineup that I think delivers it. It's not going to be Polanco. Bichette will be a great hitter, but I don't think he's going to give the power. They have to – I mean, I know everybody loves Brett Beatty. I get it. Enough. Vientos is the guy that can be the power bat in the lineup, but if they can't get him at bats because they don't trust him anywhere, it's a problem because he should be your DH every day. That's really what it should be. And they have too many of the same guy fighting for the same freaking spot. And again, I'm not a David Stearns guy. I think he thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room. And he's got this, you know, he had to overpay dramatically for Soto. He had to do it to get him. And he did. And now he's kind of handcuffed. And now we're going to see what happens here. But I think the Mets will be fighting for that wild card spot. I think they'll be a playoff team.
All right. And then we move over to the Yankees.
Lots of changes. All right. No. The Yankees didn't do
it. Go through the wall. Come on, Darren.
The Yankees said, let's run it back. G.
All right. Let me start this off, and then you can pick it right up, Darren. So not many changes. We know that.
Not many.
Here's the thing. I think, and you'll disagree with me right off the bat, so that's okay. I think they had to give the offer to Grisham early because they did not know what they were going to do with Bellinger, and they didn't know what you were going to get in spring from your two outfielders that are now in the minor leagues in Dominguez and Spencer Jones, okay? However, Grisham is not the one taking Dominguez's spot in this roster right now. It's Randall Grichuk.
Yeah, no, it's written down. I agree with you.
Well, that I think is the more egregious issue.
It's because he had that real crappy spring at 347 with power. I mean, you know, he's a 23-year-old young switch hitter. So by all means, let's try to kill the confidence the best we can, especially since he's been up here for 2 years now. I don't understand this love affair of Grichuk, however we pronounce his name, who we've seen for years as a fourth or fifth outfielder. But I got a 23-year-old switch-hitting kid that was the jewel of my system that I can't even leave up here. And I have another kid that's 6'7", that's built like Thor, that I can't get at bats for either because I have Randall Grichuk. And I have Trent Grisham, who, again, had a big double tonight and he'll continue to hit and all that stuff. And we know what Trent Grisham is. I mean, listen, he might hit a little bit more power now than he used to, but he's still going to hit 230 when the year's over. It's just the way it is. He'll give you a good defense, really good defense, above average. The rotation, listen, the big part of this rotation is Cole, Rodon, and Schmidt are all out. So when they get back, it's a lot better looking rotation. Cole was put on the 15-day and not the 60.
Correct. Which is,
yes. That's sick.
I guess it makes you feel a little bit better. We'll see what happens when he actually is able to go. Rodon and Schmidt, you know, guys that were coming on, I used to kill Clark Schmidt, and then all of a sudden I fell in love with the guy, and now he can't stay with us. The shortstop situation is still there. The third base situation is still there. No upgrades at either one, as far as I'm concerned. The bullpen. Listen, Bednar got sent down in the early part of last year. I mean, before we sit there and say, well, we have the closer. Well, we think we have the closer. He was all right down the stretch, but this guy got sent down. You know?
Doval was horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Doval was horrible when he was here. Amongst other guys, Fernando Cruz, I like because he misses bats, but if he falls behind, he doesn't miss any bats. There's a lot of things that I get nervous about with this team, but the offense is hard to really argue with in other positions. I think they have enough to be – I think they're going to win the East, but I think it's going to be really close in a really good division. Baltimore's taking steps. We know what Toronto is already. Boston's getting only better and young and good, and Tampa always surprises the hell out of you. G, what are your thoughts?
Well, if you told me at the All-Star break that it's Fried, Cole, Rodon, Schlittler as your 1-2-3-4, I'd say we were going to have a pretty damn good second half.
No doubt.
Weathers, Heel, Warren, they're all going to get starts right now. The shortstop situation, it's Caballero. There's no other option at the moment because they don't want to bring Lombard Jr. up here right now. So it's Caballero until Volpe comes back. And if Caballero isn't hitting when Volpe comes back, Volpe probably gets the job back with no problem. Then they'll mix and match Caballero all over the place. McMahon's going to be a third baseman. We wanted them to bring Mann in at the trade deadline. They did. You know, am I confident, 100% confident in Rice at first base? No, but, you know, they did bring Goldschmidt in here to play once or twice a week if he has to. It's a solid team. They brought it back. It's a solid team. I think as much as you complain about the bullpen, you screamed about Bednar 2 years before he got sent down for a month, that you wanted him here.
I did.
I wanted him on the Mets too.
Listen, Other than the top two or three closers, every bullpen in baseball has the same stuff that this Yankee team is looking at, and it's Bednar and Duvall and Cruz and Bird and Hill. It's the same type of guys all over the place.
No, they just need to get performance from him and hope for the best. Austin Wells has to be a little bit stronger than he was last year, in my opinion.
I think it's the same team as last year. I think it's 90 plus wins. And I think we get in the playoffs. And as I've been saying for the past 15 years at this point, once you get in the playoffs, then it's a crapshoot as to what happens in the playoffs.
Well, the crapshoot has been the Yankees don't win.
Well,
since 2009, which not to try to act like a spoiled Yankee fan is an awful long time. So, but nonetheless, we'll see what happens with this team. I agree with you. I would have liked to have seen an upgrade somewhere on the left side of the infield. We didn't do that. The pitching, I think they did what they could with the injuries. I think, you know, getting Weathers in here was helpful, you know, and I think that Schlittler emerging was great. Sending Heel down was a little bit of a surprise to me today because they had to keep Cade Winquest with that great 6'4" because they pick him up in the Rule 5 and no one wants to look stupid. So we got to start the season with this guy that's going to end up back in St. Louis within like 3 weeks because he couldn't pitch in spring training. But by all means, he'll start up here and he'll start in the minors, whatever it is. It's not a big deal on that. The key to this team is going to be, Bellinger really kind of being that guy to be along with Judge. Sorry, Kev.
Gino, what's the over-under for the Yankees?
90.5.
90.5? You know, they're going to be right around that number, I think, 91, 92. And let's be honest, the way that American League East is tough this year, like there's enough balance, especially when you look at somebody like the Mariners out West who are going to put up a lot of wins. 92 might be enough to win this AL East just because it's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. I think they're going to win the East, but I don't think they're going to do more than 92 or 93 wins.
Yep.
And it's going to have to be a good – like Gino said – the second half's going to be the key to this team. When the pitchers are back, what Cole are we getting? You know, I don't expect a ton out of Rodon, but, you know, you kind of hope a little bit more for Cole, and you'll see what you get from him. Right now, they're off to a good start.
Yes, they are.
7-0 in the sixth.
You know, good first start of the season for Fried. You like that. That signing ends up being huge last year. And, we'll see what happens the rest of the way.
Do we all still think it's the Dodgers to lose again?
Hard not to.
They
brought Diaz in.
And Tucker.
I mean,
I don't love Kyle Tucker like you guys do.
I don't think he's
I know he's good. I think he's the most overrated player in the league.
He's not a $60 million-a-year player.
No, I think he's very overrated. I think he's very good, but he's overrated.
And might as well enjoy baseball this year because there may not be any next year.
Yeah, so let's take it in stride.
I mean, the one stat I was reading today with the Dodgers, since the 23-24 offseason, so the last three off seasons, Ohtani, Yamamoto, Snell, Glasnow, Edmund, Tanner Scott, Suzuki, Tucker, and Diaz, those nine players, they've combined to guarantee $1.8 billion. More than the Rays, the Marlins, the Pirates, and the A's have each spent in the 21st century.
That's great.
Something's going to happen.
Staggering.
Yeah. I've got two other little baseball points, too.
Go for it, man.
Yeah.
The Giants tonight. Helio Ramos is starting in left field. Big deal, right? Is the second straight opening day star for Helio Ramos in left field. The first time the Giants have done that, same left fielder in back-to-back opening day since Barry Bonds in 2007. The 17 seasons between 08 and 24, they've had 17 different starting left fielders.
That's crazy.
Wow, that's crazy, Kev.
And just to make you feel old, the Philly starting center fielder this year at the start of the season is going to be Justin Crawford. Yes, son of Carl Crawford.
Carl Crawford.
Do you feel older now?
I already did. now it clinches it.
Yep.
All right, we'll do more on baseball next week. We'll do some over-unders. We'll pick some divisions and stuff.
Absolutely. We'll have some fun with it.
NHL, Kev, got a couple of points?
Yeah, especially with the Islanders. You know, this is getting dicey for the Islanders here.
Real dicey.
As of today, they were on the outside looking in. They've had such a good season. They've got more points than last year already. You've seen Matthew Schneider. I mean, it's been so much fun to watch. They have the 12th best record in the NHL. Too bad it's only 9th best in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
You know, they come out Sunday night. They had a huge win. I mean, weird game. Bo Horvat scores on the first shot of the game. They win 1-0. Yeah. You miss the first shot, you miss the entire game. Then they come back and they're home against the Chicago Blackhawks. They go up 1-0 minute in, give up 4 straight goals to the Blackhawks and lose 4-3. That was just one of those brutal losses that you can't afford to have. And right now they've got 10 games left. 8 of them are at home, so that's an advantage. But this is a tough, tough schedule. You've got 4 games left against surefire playoff teams in Dallas, Buffalo, and Carolina twice. And 4 other games against teams you're battling. Pittsburgh, Philly, Ottawa, and Montreal. That's 8 of the 10 games against playoff-worthy teams. This is going to be tough. What do you guys think? Are they going to be able to do this?
Well, Ottawa's gotten really hot. I don't know if they're able to maintain it. You know, that's the thing. Ottawa's just started to win every night, every time out. So you hope that they just kind of cool off. It's not like Boston's way ahead. The problem is now they have to play one more game than the Red Wings, yep. Senators, and the Bruins. So they got a little work to do. And the other thing is that whether you think the Sabres are tough or not, you're going to have to play them in the playoffs if you get in, most likely. So you might as well find a way to beat them now.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're a fun team to watch. They've rejuvenated the area here as a Long Islander. You know, people are really pumped about this team. The kid has been outstanding. The goaltending is good. You know, they just need to get some more timely goals. It can't just be Horvat every night. There's got to be other guys. You know, I know Barzal trips in and stuff, but they need more from some of the veterans here, and they got to find a way to get over the top. You're this close. You had this kind of a season. You don't want to sit there. They're going to finish with like 90-something points. You don't want to miss the playoffs in the 90s.
Yeah. And the problem is, I don't know how you guys feel, if the Islanders don't make the playoffs, and we've got no Islanders, no Rangers, no Devils, how much are you invested in the playoffs?
Yeah, I know.
Because of this podcast, more than we would.
Yeah.
If we didn't have the podcast, we wouldn't do anything with it.
I mean, let's be honest.
Let's be honest.
You know, you game's on. You know, you flip to it, you know, because you finally run out. Your wife goes off to bed or something, and you're flipping around, and you go, oh, this is a tight game in the third period. Maybe it's going to go overtime. I'll stay and watch it. Are you watching any of the late games start?
Of course not.
No.
But you look right now in the East, just as an example, the teams that wouldn't make the playoffs, the Rangers, the Maple Leafs, the Panthers, the Caps, you know, I mean, these are, you know, Islanders right now, you know, throwing the Red Wings, Flyers, Devils. I mean, if you told me those were the 8 teams in the playoffs, I'd believe you.
Yeah.
The teams that are in were the Sabres, the Lightning, you expect, the Canadiens, the Hurricanes, the Blue Jackets, the Penguins, the Bruins, and the Sens. I mean, these teams are all very, very close together. And the funny part about it is, as good as they are, the top teams in the West are better. So the West itself isn't better. The top three teams are.
Yeah.
Everybody else sucks.
I mean, the Pacific Division wouldn't make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
Not at all. It doesn't make any sense, but that's where we are. The Ducks leading the way. I love it when Edmonton struggles. I hope they don't make it. Anyway, we move on.
Kev?
What else you got?
A little NBA.
Let's talk a little NBA.
Yeah. Knicks are on a roll. They've won 7 in a row. The bad news, it's been Utah, Indy, Golden State, Indy again, Brooklyn, Washington, and New Orleans. Goodbye winning percentage, .288. Now you look at it and go, they've beaten the teams they should beat. Great. Wonderful. It's helped them get back to tie Boston for second as the second seed in the Eastern Conference. Again, I think that's going to matter if they get to play Boston second round to get home court. But overall, in the NBA itself, the 20 playoff teams are set.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference, you've got the hierarchy. You've got Detroit, the Knicks, the Celtics, Cleveland as the top 4. And then 5 through 10 are separated by 2.5 games. And I think with Detroit, the question is going to be with them, with Kate Cunningham. He's not back until at least early April with the injury.
Yeah, we thought it was one of Shaq's relatives ended up being Kate Cunningham at that breakfast.
Right, yes, we did. Out West, you know, you've got a couple of different tiers. You've got the top tier, OKC and San Antonio. There's 3 games difference there. Then you've got an 8-game back gap back to the Lakers. Denver, Minnesota, and Houston all look like they're in good shape to avoid the play-in. Then you got the four play-in teams. Big deal. They're all 500 records. They tell you, much like the NHL, especially the Knicks don't make any sort of playoff run. We're not big NBA guys here anyway. How much interest do you really have? Are you going to be glued to watch the Celtics chuck up 53s a game? Are you going to watch SGA draw ridiculous fouls and go to the line 15 times a game? No. You want to watch LeBron flop all over the place and watch referees looking for calls every time? If the Knicks don't make a run here, just like if the Islanders don't make the playoffs at all, if the Knicks don't make any sort of deep run, how much are you investing in the NBA playoffs?
It makes it hard here in New York, pal. It really does. And the thing about it is, you know, all four sports have changed, as Gina will always remind me.
Yes, they have.
Since when we were growing up. But the NBA's change has been the hardest one for me to accept. I accept everything else. You know, listen, I might whine and cry about things, but I still enjoy watching the games. But the NBA has become the hardest one for me to accept. I just I don't know. And if I don't have a team to root for, it really becomes hard for me.
Yeah, I saw a clip the other night. You know, LeBron. I think Doncic stole the ball. Feeds LeBron going ahead. He takes, you know, the one step, the gather step, one dribble, four more steps. He takes one dribble to cover like three quarters of the court and gets a basket. Oh, what a great – what the athleticism for a 43-year-old. He took one dribble.
Is that some enhanced Euro step?
Gather step, Euro step, extra step. I mean, it's ridiculous what this game has become.
I know all these sports want more offense and stuff, and I get it. But it doesn't make the game more entertaining. It makes the game more entertaining to children.
Yeah, it does. It
doesn't make the game more entertaining in football when, you know, when it's playing Tecmo Bowl. It doesn't make it more exciting for baseball. Well, it does a little bit sometimes, but I still like good old-fashioned pitcher's duels when it's good pitching versus good hitting, not good pitching versus lousy hitting. And I still, you know, in hockey, you know, it's probably changed the least of the four sports, but it still has changed some. It's just, you know, everything evolves. That's just where we are now.
And get off my lawn.
Get off my freaking lawn.
And that's the NBA I had. Anything else in the Knicks? Or?
No, I will go back to one thing, though. Islanders to make the playoffs right now are at plus 350.
It might be worth the bet, Kev.
Yeah.
I think they're going to make it. I don't know why. I just have a hunch.
Like I said, I really hope they do. It's been such a fun year.
Yeah, they've been good. They've been real good. They have a goalie that can steal things, steal games for them.
When you get a fun season like this, it's tough when if they wind up not making the playoffs, it's just a tough get, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Hopefully, they can find a way. Just a little bit on horse racing for everybody. Listen, the Kentucky Derby is about 6 weeks away, guys. Just to go through a couple of the prep races that happened already. The Risen Star was won by Paladin, who's the current favorite, overall 9-1 for the Derby. Nearly won the Holy Bull. He's running again this week in the Florida Derby. Emerging Market won the Louisiana Derby. The Gotham was won by Iron Honor. Rebel was won by Class President. The Fountain of Youth was won by Commandment. The Tampa Bay Derby was won by The Puma. San Felipe was Potente. The Virginia Derby, Incredible. I never think much of the Virginia Derby, but they give you 50 points, so I got to count it. And, of course, the famous Jeff Ruby Stakes, won by Full Effort. This week we got two more, okay? We got the Florida Derby, which is worth 100 points, and the Arkansas Derby with 100 points. The favorites in these races nearly is running in the Florida Derby. Not the favorite, though. The favorite right now would be Commandment, and then Chief Wallaby the second, and the Puma. The thing about it is this one speed horse is not a lot of, you know, none of these horses really run up front. Nearly will probably be the one that kind of takes off. The other ones all need pace to close. Arkansas Derby, Renegade, the favorite. Interestingly, thing about Renegade is Arad Ortiz left Commandment to ride Renegade. So he must think something about this race in the Arkansas Derby. Silent Tactic and Litmus Test, who ran well in the Fountain of Youth. And I'm sorry, not the Fountain, the Rebel will also be in that race. Next week, you get the Bluegrass, Santa Anita, and the Wood, and then we'll know who's in the field, basically. So the Derby's coming up. We'll get more into it as we go. Again, it's going to be an interesting, it's going to be an interesting run to see who qualifies and who's the favorite and who's going to be competitive in this race.
Okay. Anything else, guys?
Not for me.
I am good.
Baseball starting up. Sweet 16 coming. Should be a busy week.
7-0.
I'll wrap us up then. We are the Sports Kings of Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where Major League Baseball is so dumb they start the league season on Netflix on a freaking Wednesday night with no other games being played, where teams are off on Sunday, where they don't know how to control Memorial Day. They don't know how to control the 4th of July. They don't know how to control Labor Day. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. If you don't like the stuff we're sharing, we asked about the Yankees today. We'll ask about the Mets tomorrow. Like our stuff, share our stuff, give us your opinion. Even if you don't have an opinion, make one up. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.